This is the Dental Hacks Podcast, a podcast created by dentists for dentists. Now, sit back, relax. You're about to be hacked.
Hello, Dental Hacks listeners. Welcome to episode 70 of the Dental Hacks Podcast. My name is Alan Mead.
Hey there, I'm Jason Lipscomb.
Jason Lipscomb.
That's me.
It is. You sound whipped. You sound like you've been recording interviews for an hour or something. I don't know.
I have been singing bass all day.
Yeah, you know. So how is it that you lose your voice in your dental office? I want to hear what exactly it is that you're doing or talking about that makes it so your voice is gone.
I don't know. I'm just not a big talker. That may sound as a surprise, but...
You let your assistant do all the talking?
No, not really. I just get all raspy at the end of the day for some reason. I start out at a baritone, and then I end up like this.
It's the wild turkey you sit between patients that does it.
Oh, sure. I wish.
You've had days, huh?
Oh, I wish.
We only joke about that. We don't condone that.
Yes, we definitely don't condone that.
I am the guy who fills quiet spaces. So if there's an awkward pause where no one's saying anything, I start telling a story. I'm terrible. I'm so codependent. I can't handle silence. Not to mention the fact that we have TVs blaring all the time too. So there's never silence at my office yet. Somehow I have to be telling the story, which is really silly because you know they can only hear about a quarter of what I'm saying anyhow. So
I just picture you tapping on their shoulder constantly. And then this one time.
Remember?
This one time.
Remember? When that was awesome. Yeah. Man, that might resemble me. I don't know. That might resemble me a little bit. It could be. Oh, goodness. So we have this interview. Guy by the name of Bob Summers. If you've never heard of him, he is one of the, I don't know if I'd say inventor, or he started a company that does what's called the 5-star review system. Mm. And
why not 6 stars?
Well,
why stop there?
Why stop there? Yeah, actually, it's funny that you say that.
Yes.
Because their system is such that it's a system to help promote reviews on Google as well as Yelp. And I mean, basically you can promote them anywhere you want to, and it works with all of them. It's an add-on. It's a service you pay for. I think it's $50 a month or something like that. And actually there's a break on the setup fee. If you mention that you heard him on the Dental Hacks, we'll give you more details at the end.
Yes.
But the bottom line is that he's an interesting interview. And I'm probably going to buy the system. I guess that's sort of promoting the system. But to be frank, by the time you're done listening to this part of the interview, you're going to be saying, okay, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? It's really good. He spends a lot of time kind of explaining where he came from. And then he starts telling you how to ask for reviews, which is pretty cool because everyone says, well, you know, if you're not getting reviews, it's because you're not asking for it. But yet it sounds simple, but actually there's kind of a good way to do it. And he spells it out, man. And yeah, it's not in Spanish, in case you're wondering. And I mean, unless Spanish is
your patient. Qué horror.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, it's really good. It's a good interview. So do you ask for reviews, Jason?
Exactamente. Sí. Todo el tiempo, yo. Preguntar
para Google 5-star?
Para 5-star. El 5 estrellas, por favor.
Hey, that's impressive. All right.
Yes.
All right, so everyone, sit back, relax, listen to our interview with Bob Summers of the 5-Star Review System.
And now it's time for the Dental Hacks interview.
Hello, Dental Hacks listeners. We have a really interesting interview for you tonight. Someone you may not have heard before. Actually, you may have heard before because apparently he had a podcast for a long time. But we have an expert on getting reviews for your website, for your office, and a lot of other marketing genius from what it sounds like. We have Bob Summers on tonight. Bob is coming from the island of Maui, the town of Kihei. And Bob, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, Alan. I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely. I want to talk about reviews, but first I kind of, you have an interesting background, I think, just from reading on the website and stuff. You've been doing this for a while. This is not a new thing for you, it sounds like. Tell me a little bit about your history in marketing and marketing with dentists before we get into the meat.
Oh, man. Okay. So it started with my first engineering job, of which I was fired from because I'm not a very good engineer.
what kind of engineering?
I'm a mechanical engineer.
Oh, okay.
So the guy that hired me, I worked for Trane Air Conditioning Company in Atlanta, and the guy that I worked for, he's like, Bob, you know, we really enjoy having you around, but you are a horrible engineer. So he said, I've got good news and bad news. And the good news, or the bad news is, he said, you're fired. I said, oh my God, how can you possibly follow that up with good news?
Yeah, really.
And he said, well, the good news is, you know, you have a tendency for this public speaking. I see that you do it on the side. You really enjoy it. I know some really great professional speakers here in Atlanta, and I'd like to get you in touch with them and maybe help you get a new career started. So, boy, I tell you, Alan, that was wonderful. I was only 24 or 25 at the time. So that was the beginning of a 20-year public speaking career that I really, really enjoyed. And over that time, we ended up building what became the largest customer service training company in the country. We were bigger than Dale Carnegie and all these folks. And we literally did thousands of workshops all over the place. And what we discovered was, it wasn't the training that people liked. They loved having humorous public speakers. So we would hire humorous public speakers and teach them customer service skills so they would go out. And the audiences just loved these folks, loved them. Well, so anyway, we eventually retired here to Maui. Gosh, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years ago.
Wow.
And over that time, we decided we were going to get into this whole internet marketing thing. And 10 years ago, we did all of this. We did local search, SEO. And then about 4 years ago, we decided that we were only going to focus on reviews. It was really important. It had huge impact on ranking, trust, tons of things. So about 4 years ago, we created this service called the 5-star review system. And since that time, I'll bet we've sent out 1 million review requests, most of those emails, some text, of course. And I bet we have maybe 700 or 800 dentists all over the world that are using the system right now.
Okay.
And learned a ton from dealing with dentists. What a unique industry you guys work in.
Okay. So you're not specific to dentists. It sounds like you use lots of different industries. Okay. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Interesting.
And we've learned, it's so amazing, the stuff we learn about getting reviews. One of the most valuable lessons I learned about getting Google reviews specifically came from a guy that rents used cars in Florida. And I'll tell you his tip a little later on, but it is amazing, where you learn things about getting reviews and what people do. It's interesting, but dentists represent a very big part of our market. I don't know if they're the biggest, but we have tons of dentists that use the system.
Okay. So I want you to, before we even dive into this, tell me what you think the hardest industry that you work with to get interviews for is. In other words, what is it?
It's the death industry.
Okay.
Cremation and funeral services. And I want you to imagine for just a minute, there's a grieving spouse and I walk up to her and I go, sweetheart, I am so sorry that your husband passed away. By the way, would you do me a favor?
Okay. So I guess I sort of fell into that. Okay. Outside of the death industry, what's another tough one to get people to write reviews for?
Well, okay. Now that's a different question. A tough one to get them to write reviews for. I'll tell you what, it's not so much the profession, it's the person.
Okay.
And there are certain things, if you want reviews, there's certain things you have to do. I mean, you have to do. And there's actually 5 of them, and I'll walk you through those a little later.
Okay.
But what we know is if you have a person that is gregarious and does a great job and is willing to ask for a review, and they know they do a great job and they're worthy of it, it doesn't matter what industry they're in, Alan, they're going to get reviews.
Interesting.
But we find that there's people that are, you know, they're not willing to ask. And and oftentimes when I hear that, what I wonder is, you know, are you really providing the kind of service you feel worthy of getting a review for? And if you don't, maybe that's why they're uncomfortable.
You know, but I'm going to challenge you on that a little bit though. What's interesting is with the professions, particularly physicians, dentists, people who essentially have a code of ethics they're supposed to be following. We're very touchy about that. Like we're very touchy about, marketing in general. It's just sort of a problem for us. A lot of dentists have really come late to the game with marketing. And so this feels like the same kind of thing where, it feels like something that asking for a view is sort of viewed as unprofessional or mm-hmm. it's an uncomfortable mm-hmm. thing. And so I think probably it might not be that a dentist feels like they're not delivering great service, but they're feeling like, ooh, that's really cheesy. Or it's really unprofessional to ask for that.
Yeah.
Versus, say, a restaurant or someone that, frankly, we're dealing with a code of ethics where we're supposed to put, you know, we're literally held to a standard where we put our customers, you know, well-being ahead of our own sort of thing. And so this weird profession thing gets in the way. I suspect that might be some of it for the doctors and dentists and lawyers.
I agree with you completely. Oh, I completely agree. And by the way, this percentage I was talking about that doesn't ask because they don't feel they do a good job, they are so rare. And I don't think I've run across a single dentist that has had that issue. That's but every once in a while I run across somebody that just is afraid to ask. But you're right. And one of the other things that I find really interesting, there's a lot of dentists, for example, that, you know, I encourage them to ask their patients to write a review, and some are reticent with it, and it's not because they're uncomfortable. It's for the exact reason you said. But what happens is, when they learn how to ask for a review in such a way that it's not pushy, it's not manipulative, and they realize that people really want to do this for them, they get hooked. Because they realize, wow, whenever I ask for a review, this is one of the best conversations in the world. Because as soon as I ask, the patient responds like this, oh my God, I'd love to write a review. I love you guys. You're the best. And all of a sudden, that becomes the habit. They're like, I can't wait to ask for the next review.
Interesting. What's interesting, though, is like, I think there's, this is sort of like the asking for the first date to some extent, though, where you're kind of like, ooh, is it, what if they don't? What if they think, ooh, that's weird that you, do you know what I'm saying? Like there's a little bit of that to it, I think.
I do. Well, I'll give you an example. One of my very best friends who is a search engine optimization guy in St. Louis, he fully understands the value of reviews. So I had showed him the system and he was using it and getting great results. And I said, Adam, will you do me a favor? Would you mind taking a couple of minutes to write a Google review for me? Dead silence. Mm-hmm. I said, Adam, are you still there? He goes, yeah, I'm here. And I said, what's the deal? Why are you so quiet? He goes, Bob, you know, I know the value of reviews and I love your system, but I'm just really uncomfortable writing a review on the internet. I'll be happy to tell you how awesome you are, but I'm just not going to do it publicly for anybody. And I realized this was the first time I've seen a lot of this since, by the way, where there are people that are just so concerned about their privacy that they're not going to write a review. And that's the number one reason if anyone pauses, it's because they're not comfortable with it.
You know,
it's not,
you're right. I'm thinking of it. I'm like, okay, there are a lot of people who have, okay, I'm on Facebook all the time. We're doing a podcast. We're putting ourselves out there. It's clearly not, I don't put anything out there that I wouldn't want on the front page of the paper. That's always been my rule. You know, so like I'm not worried about being embarrassed about something like that. But I know there's a lot of people who feel like anything that gets out there at all is a real invasion of their privacy. And although I don't understand it, like I don't get why, I mean it's kind of their prerogative. I think you're right. I think there are some people that are sort of like that.
Well, here's another interesting group of people. There are certain people, and I'm learning this now. I'm not one of them, by the way, but there is a very, very large group of people, probably over half, that are comfortable writing a review for you while they're in your office. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, they should never be writing it on your computer or IP addresses and tons of other reasons. But I represent the other half that's very uncomfortable writing a review while I'm in the presence of the person that asked me to do it. And it's so interesting. After sending out a million of these things, holy cow, have we learned some idiosyncrasies about human behavior. And you're only going to learn about those people when you first come across them. And they're always going to throw you for a loop the first time. You're like, holy cow, nobody's ever responded to me like that before.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, for the most part, when you ask someone to write a review, particularly when you and your staff do a great job, and you know you're doing that kind of a job, it is an amazingly fun and pleasant conversation every time.
Sure. It is. It's funny, too, because I don't, you know the people that it's appropriate to ask to.
Yeah.
The ones that you clicked with, the ones that everything's, you know, you knocked out of the park with I get that part of it too, but you know, let's dive in. Let's get into the nitty gritty. And I'm hoping by the time we're done today that our listeners are going to have a really good idea on how to do this, why to do this, and you know, the best ways to make it
perfect.
Work for them. So, okay. I want to just start. Obviously at least in my area and probably most places, the best review to get, if you can possibly get, because it's so directly important to your SEO and your Google local is, right, is a Google review. Would that be right?
Absolutely. Now, if you were in San Francisco or in the center of a big urban area in New York, Los Angeles, I would tell you it's Yelp.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
Oh, definitely. If you go, the further away you go from downtown San Francisco, the less important Yelp becomes and the more important Google becomes. Now, there are anomalies around the country. If you're in Atlanta, Kudzu is a really big deal,
okay,
and most people have never heard of it. But you're absolutely right. Google is the 800-pound gorilla. But I want to mention something else here, too, Alan, that a lot of folks aren't aware of. Yelp is the fastest-growing review site on the Internet. Now, most people go to Google to look for a dentist, for example.
Yeah.
However, if you are on an iPhone and you're looking for a dentist, Apple shows Yelp reviews.
Yep.
If you go to Bing, they show Yelp reviews. Mm-hmm. If you go to Yahoo, they show Yelp reviews. So you cannot discount Yelp just because you are the one that goes to Google.
Sure.
But yes, Google is, it is the hardest place to get a review, and I agree it is the most valuable.
It's interesting that you say this. I want to remind listeners that several episodes back, we actually had Morgan Remmers from Yelp. We had two episodes where we kind of grilled her about how Yelp works. So I'll figure out, I don't know what the episode numbers are right now, but if you're interested in hearing some very specific Yelp stuff, we interviewed someone from Yelp as well. So
wonderful.
We got some information, but I before we dive in, I'm sorry, I just got to know what is it about bigger cities that why is it that Yelp is so good there? And like, I mean, honestly, I'm in Saginaw, Michigan, and Yelp, you couldn't get any traction with Yelp as a dentist, right, if you wanted to. It's crazy. What is the story on that?
Now, this is my guess, okay? You know, Yelp, when they started, they started in the medical industry. I mean, that's how the owner,
yep,
got started. However, they quickly went into the restaurant side. Restaurants took off. And when you think about high concentrations of high-end restaurants, they tend to be in New York City.
Sure.
Downtowns. And I think what happens is the people that caught on to Yelp in those locations for that reason, they started reviewing other businesses, including dentists and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the reason for it. But, you know, I hope we have time because I would like to share some things with your listeners about Yelp that they probably aren't aware of and things that the Yelp people probably aren't going to tell you.
Okay.
You know, Yelp has a vested interest in getting you to invest in Yelp and use Yelp, and well, they should. However, there are things as a dentist you need to know about Yelp, and please do not discard them. They're very important, but I would like to share with you guys.
We'll come to that. Why don't we make sure we won't end before we've talked about Yelp.
Good.
Because
good.
We tried to get Morgan to admit some stuff and she wouldn't admit it.
Okay.
I think every dentist that's really worked with Yelp knows there's some stuff that she may have omitted some stuff. Let's just say that.
That's possible. A Yelp person omitting something?
Yeah, go figure. There's a documentary coming out called, like, isn't it called The Billion Dollar Bully or something like
the
that?
The Billion Dollar Bully. That's exactly what it's called. I'm anxious to see it.
I am too. All right. Yeah. So why is it so hard to get Google reviews? And what can a dentist do about it to make it easier?
Great. So let's go back 5 years ago. 5 years ago, anyone could write a Google review. It was easy. There was no Google Plus. You just needed a Google account.
It was paradise is what it was.
Paradise.
The reviews I have, probably 75% of them are from then. Because it was easy to get everyone to do it. You know, it wasn't, they didn't have to log in. They didn't have to do all that stuff.
And you notice it was written by the same person, a Google user.
Yeah.
And they all have the same cartoon profile.
Exactly.
Picture.
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah.
But then things got harder. And then what happened was Google decided that you needed not a Gmail account. And this is one of the biggest misperceptions dentists have, but you have to have a Google Plus.
Google Plus. Yeah, exactly. It's not just a Gmail account.
No, it's not. Now, if you have a Gmail account, Alan, getting a Google Plus account is is three steps. It's really easy. Google requires only three additional things. We want you to upload a profile picture. We want you to tell us if you're a male or a female, and we want you to tell us your date of birth. Now, remember, this is for somebody that already has a Gmail account. Google doesn't even require that you upload a profile picture, but you do have to tell Google what is your date of birth and are you a male or female. Now, quite frankly, that's a really easy thing to do. It takes way less than a minute, but there are those people out there like my friend, Adam, and I'd give you his last name, but he would cringe if I publicly told you this. But, you know, they just don't want that privacy information out there, so they won't do it. So what happens was it got hard. Now, it started getting harder about 2 years ago. And the reason it got even harder 2 years ago is because of mobile and because Apple and Google do not play well together.
That's exactly right, yeah.
So, you know, they don't play in the same sandbox. And Apple made it difficult to write Google reviews, and Google made it difficult for people on iPhones. Now, it still wasn't all that hard 2 years ago because most people were still going to their desktop computer to write a review. As every day passes, we saw about a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago, because we track everything, all of a sudden now more people are getting their emails on a cell phone than they are on their desktop. Now, why is that harder? Well, it is harder to, it's still possible. If you had a system like ours, for example, mm-hmm. we can detect if you're on an iPhone, an Android, a desktop. So we guide you to where you need to go to write a review. However, if you're not using something like that and you're sending someone to your Google About page where they write a review, mm-hmm. you know the page I'm talking about?
Exactly, yep. If they finally navigate the maze, there's a little button that says write a review, but it takes a lot to get there.
Absolutely. So the goal is, how do you make that as easy as possible? But what happens is, that link, as of May 3rd of this year, when you click on that about link on a mobile phone, you're no longer taken to a page where you can write a review on a mobile phone. I can read all your reviews if I click on your about page from your mobile phone, mm-hmm. but I cannot write one. Were you aware of that?
You know, I was not, because I don't, when I write reviews, I typically do it on my computer.
Right.
So I'm not looking there. So even on an Android phone, you can't do it.
Well, it's much easier on an Android, but
sure.
that link, if you click on that about link from an Android phone, mm-hmm. you can't write a review. So
interesting.
What happened was, now with Google, all of these links we were sending to people, and a lot of dentists figured this out themselves, let's just send them a link in an email where they can write the review. Well, as of May 3rd, all of those people, which now represents more than half of them, when they click on that link, they can't write a review. Mm-hmm. And the dentists don't know that. They keep sending that link out because they've never tried it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then things got even more difficult. And this is something that has been a nemesis for a long time. And I assure you, only a handful of dentists know this. If you have a link to your Google Plus page on your website where people can write a review, and that's a good idea, Google randomly will change that link without telling you, from taking you to the about page where you can write a review to your post page. Now, they don't say anything to you. They just send people to your post page randomly.
Interesting.
And what happens is, people go to the post page thinking, well, this is the page the dentist has asked me to go to, and they're looking for any place to write a review. So what they do is they comment on a post, and that certainly doesn't count as a review.
Sure.
Now, with technology like ours, we instantly can detect when that happens. And last week, Friday, we had 64 of our customers. Google changed the link randomly. Well, we found it right away and set it back. But we can do that on our system, but if you have a link on your website going there or in your signature file, you know, you're sending people to the wrong page and you don't even know it. So these are some of the things that make it harder and harder to get Google reviews. And as every day passes, as long as Google and Apple don't play together, and as long as more and more people are using cell phones, it's going to get harder and harder. Okay, so that's what makes it hard to get Google reviews. Now, are you ready to talk about what it takes to get them and how to get around all this?
Absolutely. Let's dig in.
Okay, so let me just give you five things. The first thing you have to do if you want Google reviews is you have to provide fantastic service. And I don't want to go on about this, but if your patient is not motivated to write a review, it isn't going to happen. I don't care what system you're using. It isn't going to happen. Now, if they're upset with you, oh, it'll happen.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, that is very true. And, I mean, negative reviews have been a real – I've had a lot of people call me and email me regarding negative reviews, because it's like mm-hmm. – I mean, I've talked to a guy who, like, was ready to retire from dentistry because of one woman reviewing him so wow. heavily, poorly on – I mean, it was like – I remember what it was. He called and he was super upset about it. He said it happened a couple years ago and he was finally able to make it right with this woman, and she took the review down, and then she decided she had one more bee in her bonnet, and she put one up again, and he's like, you know what? I don't think I can do this again. Literally.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was just particularly focused on that or what, but I mean, these negative reviews are a big deal. They can be a huge deal for dentists. They can be a, a huge stress, it's a problem for sure.
Well, I tell you what, I'm one of those people. I'm a super sensitive person, and a bad review would destroy me emotionally. I would just think about it all day long. There's something I wanted to say about this. So I don't remember, but you are absolutely right. A bad review can destroy you emotionally. There's no doubt about it.
And what you were saying, interestingly though, is that the difference between, you know, you really have to help motivate someone to write one. If they think your service is good, they're going to do it, but it's still, that's where you want to ask. You don't have to ask for those negative ones, man. Those are going to show up.
Right. And generally you don't want to, right?
Yeah, exactly. But what's funny is how there are a lot of people who have, there's sort of this review culture. And I mean, Yelp really has gotten into this, but frankly, there's this review culture that, you know, if someone feels they've been done wrong, man, they know, and they can hold it over a business owner. It's kind of crazy. I mean, like, if anyone knows about the dentist who shot the lion, you know, his Yelp page was just inundated with thousands and thousands of negative reviews of people who clearly have never been in his presence before. They just hated what he did so much, you know, so it's a real thing, you know?
And I'll tell you, I'm so sensitive about bad reviews. I've written probably 80 reviews on Google in my life. And here's what I do. When I get good service, I write a great review. If I get bad service, I don't write a review on the internet because I know how devastating it can be. Yeah. I just don't do it. And you know, that's just me. There's tons of people that are comfortable writing bad reviews. But the first thing you've got to do if you want good reviews on, and we'll talk about Google specifically, is you've got to provide great service. Because if you provide great service, even if you don't ask, people will go out of their way. They will stumble over every stumbling block or leap over it to find a way to say something nice about you. That's the first thing. The second thing is you've got to ask. And I'd like to demonstrate, if you don't mind, what we found to be the most effective way to ask. Do you mind if I do that?
Absolutely. Okay. Go for it.
So the other thing I want to say before I role play with you, Alan, is this. We find statistically when a dentist or a hygienist, the person who actually provides the service, when they are the one that ask, the response rate on average is 3.5 times greater than if the assistant or if the person up front ask.
Interesting.
Unbelievable. And the reason for that is we as the patient want to reward the person that provided the service. Now, if you have somebody that works up front who is phenomenal, I mean, they are absolutely outstanding, they'll get half as many reviews as you. They will never get as many as you, but it's way more than if you have someone that's just okay up front. So let me just role play with you now. Well, let's just take it from here. You ready?
Yep.
You're my patient. The time is about to go. And here we go. Hey, Alan, before you go, do you mind if I ask you a favor, please?
Sure.
Well, thank you. Later today or tonight, when you get home, when you have a couple of minutes, would you do me a favor and write a review for us on Google? And I'll tell you, the reason I'm asking is when you write a review on Google, other people can see what you said and they learn about our practice that way. Would you mind doing that for me?
Sure, I could do that.
Well, Alan, thanks. What I'd like to do before you go is I want to send you an email or a text with a link in it to where you can leave your review on Google. And I want you to know, not only do I appreciate you offering to do this for me, but I'm really looking forward to reading your comments. Thank you. Now let me stop and ask you a couple questions. Did you find anything I did pushy, aggressive, manipulative, anything like that?
Not really.
Well, no. There's a hesitation in your voice. Tell me about it. Go ahead.
Basically they are getting a hint that you have an expectation that they're going to write it and probably going to write it soon, sort of thing.
Yeah, it isn't my expectation that they're going to do that. That is correct. But I want you to notice a couple of things I didn't, and this isn't me making this up, by the way. When we look at the hundreds and hundreds of dentists all over the world that are getting an outstanding response rate, tons of Google reviews, I call those people and say, what are you doing? And this is what they tell me. They say, they ask at the peak of the patient's excitement, when they're the happiest, cavities full, whatever. And they start by saying, hey, Alan, do you mind if I ask you a favor before you go? It triggers something called commitment consistency. If you say yes to something small, you're very likely to do something bigger. The next thing was this. Later today or tonight when you get home. Now, you notice when I said that, that immediately takes off the table that I expect you to write
it in the office. Yeah.
Right. Now, if you want to, you certainly can, but you immediately know I don't expect you to write it while you're here, which is a big relief for a lot of people.
Okay.
Then I said, later today or tonight when you get home, would you mind taking just a couple of minutes to write a review for us on Google? Now, notice I'm asking you specifically to write a review on Google.
On Google, yeah.
Now, this is what we call, there's tons of different review strategies. And depending where you are in the review world, I would suggest one strategy over another. You know, there's the broad brush review strategy. There's the personal development strategy. There's the Google or bust strategy. And another one we call Google and trust. But if I'm doing anything specifically with Google, I'm going to ask you to go to Google. If I'm going to give you multiple choices, I would never ask you to go to any specific site. And under no circumstances would I ever ask you to go to Yelp. And I'll tell you more about that later.
Okay.
But in this case, and I'll still get plenty of Yelp reviews, but I'm not going to ask you to go there. So later today or tonight, when you get a few minutes, would you mind writing a review for us on Google? And immediately I tell you why. The reason I'm asking is when other people see your comments on Google, it helps them learn about our practice. Now notice, I didn't say I want you to write a good review or I want you to give me a 5-star review. I don't need to do that because our system will separate those people. Now, the next thing I said after that is probably one of the most important things of all. I said, what I'd like to do before you go is send you either an email or a text message with a link in it to where you can leave a review. Now, all that is you've got to find, and this is part three, you've got to make it super, super easy for people to write a review. Now, there's lots of things people have tried. You know, you can give people a handout, which is great. It's way better than nothing. But they still have to take the handout, take it home, pull it out, consciously go to their computer and write it. If you send an email or a text, you're in control. They're always going to sit down at their phone or their computer, and there it is right there in front of them with a link that takes them right there. They don't have to type in anything or hunt for anything. They're just taken there. And the last two things that I said are probably the two most persuasive things that you as a dentist can say to really encourage someone to write a review. And this is what I was telling you about earlier from the man in Florida that rents cars. He said, Bob, the moment I said these two things, the number of people that wrote reviews for me on Google went up by 30% instantly. And I said, well, what is it? He said, while I'm driving him back to the airport, the last thing I say after they say they'll write a review is, Alan, I really appreciate you offering to do that for me, and I want you to know I'm really looking forward to reading your comments. Wow. He said, as soon as I said that, they were now thinking, wow, he's actually looking for it. I don't want to let him down. He's looking for it. So that's the best way we found to ask for a review. Now, the step three is when someone says yes to you, and by the way, that commitment consists of the verbal, when they verbally tell you they're going to do it, they are so much more likely to do it. The next thing you have to do is you have to send that request, whether it's text or email. You have to do it literally within minutes of when they say yes. Now, with our system or what you do on your own or any other system, nobody really cares. You know, you can send it whenever you want. But what we found statistically was this. Every minute you wait to send that request after someone says yes, the less likely they are to respond. It's so bad, as a matter of fact, that if you ask people all day long and at 4 o'clock you send all those requests, say you ask 10 people, if you send those requests out at 4 o'clock, and remember, it doesn't make a difference if it's ours or yours or whatever, virtually no one will respond. It's unbelievable. However, if you send it right away, and you send it in the presence of the patient, they literally see you doing it, which is a weird thing. I still don't fully understand it. If you send it and they see you send it and they know that you know they sent it or you sent it, the likelihood of them writing that review is twice as great as if you send it at the exact same time, but they don't see you send it. So we always encourage people, if you're going to ask somebody to write a review, send the request to them, but make sure they see you do it. And it only takes 10 or 15 seconds, and there's something that's triggered in their head. Wow, I have no excuse not to do this anymore.
That's really interesting. So you would say for a dental office, if you're saying the best person to write or the best person to ask is the dentist. So the dentist asks in the way that you've described, and then you know that it's most effective when you send it immediately and in front of the patient so they can see you. A dentist with a computer in the operatory could literally have their assistant like pull out the keyboard and whatever system they're using, send it right there, and so everyone sees it. Is that what you're recommending?
And by the way, 15% of all of our dentists, that is exactly what they do. Now, the other 85%, what the dentist does is he or she or the assistant walks the patient up front where, say, Julie's working. And the assistant says, hey, Julie, Alan has offered to write a review. Will you please send him a review?
That's really good, too, because you say it again.
That's right. And you know what else? Now three people know you've offered to write a review.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you another benefit. With our system, again, it's
Alrighty. We're back from my interview with Bob Summers with the 5-star review system. So all of you guys and ladies can go out and start asking for reviews, getting this going.
Yep.
That's one of the main things that, and I teach about local search and social media out there. And a lot of people just don't know how to ask and they don't know the functionality of it. So it is real great to have different systems and different add-ons that make it easier for you to ask for reviews.
A lot of people were turned down a long time ago when they were in high school.
Yes.
And they asked that special one and they got turned down. And from there, they've never been able to ask for a review. And we're here to help.
You have one teenage girl spit in your eye and then you never ask anybody.
You never ask for anything ever again. I know you're all like broken, but Bob was there for you, man.
Yeah.
Bob was there for you. So if you have any questions or comments or you want to go sign up, it's 5-star. Let me make sure I get this right. 5starreviewsystem.com. There's all kinds of information there. And I think they have several programs from anywhere between $50 to like $200 a month. And there's a $99 setup fee. If you tell them that you heard about them from us, they knock $50 off the setup fee. Actually,
$50?
$50, I'm telling you. So it's pretty sweet. You're going to hear more specifics about that from Bob at the end of the second part of the interview next week. But honestly, this is enough to get you going. So drop our name and they drop your price. See how he did that? Boom.
What a segue.
I know. I am segue. So, for the second half of our podcast this evening, we're going to do what we call the Brain Trust. And actually, it's the second half of our Brain Trust with Dr. Lance Timmerman, Dr. Melissa Zettler, and Dr. Matt Standridge. We were talking about the first contact you have with new patients, how to wow new patients, what the new patient experience is. And we talk more about basically the difference between the full comprehensive exam versus the getting the emergency in and giving them a wow experience versus we talk a little bit about more of the different situations that you might run into. Cause not every patient walks in wanting a full panky 2-hour exam where you palpate their joints and all that stuff.
I meet them at the car with roses.
I do. I serenade them, walk them in.
Yes.
Yeah. Rub their feet.
It's like a gondola ride.
It is in
Venice.
It is. They'll never forget it.
I sing Kanye West songs.
Now you're talking. See, that's why J-Lips is rocking the new patient numbers.
And that's why my voice is so
That's why your voice is so shot. I see the mystery solved. I get it now. All right, friends.
She a gold digger.
All right. Now that we've painted that picture, I want you to sit back, relax, and listen to the wisdom of
In a world where dentists are often boring and usually humorless, there exists an elite few that rise above the cacophony of mediocrity. Occasionally, these world-class clinicians come together in a meeting of the minds unparalleled anywhere on earth. We call these gatherings the Dental Hacks Brain Trust.
Lets you decide if that's what you want or don't want, and then make a priority list from there. And they'll go, yeah, that sounds great.
The difference is you are setting aside enough time to get all the data you're going to need. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of times I'm like, wow, I kind of need more information. So I'm sort of bringing them back a second time to get the information I need. Do you see what I'm saying?
Just tell them that. Say, I need to get you back.
It's cool. But you know what happens is as a patient, a lot of times once they've decided, wow, I really need to get back into the dentist, they're itching to get going. So here I'm sort of jerking them around a little bit because I got to get them back to get some of the data. I guess that's what I feel like. I could be wrong, but
combine it with something else. Say, so this day we know that you need a deep cleaning. So let's get one of your deep cleanings done. At the same time, I can get the models I need, the photos I need. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have you back to go over your consult and start with like the hygiene. Cause I mean, you give them the fees for the scaling, root planting, or like general cleaning right away.
Yep. And if they have insurance, it's very likely that that's covered. When I've had an appropriate amount of, when I've had an appropriate amount of coffee, that is exactly what I do. I combine it. Sometimes I miss that, but that is a good, that's a good call. You can almost
miss your coffee?
What's that?
Sometimes you miss your coffee?
No, I never miss my coffee.
As I say, what the hell?
If it's too early and I'm not awake, I might not think to combine it with something that's pretty obvious that they're going to need. That's always a good way to do it. And in that way, you set aside enough time to say, let's get this part done. We know we're going to do this. And then we'll sit down and figure out what else we need to know here. We do that a lot too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of leaning towards the Melissa thing. Except I hate to burn the hour, but honestly, it's not like I'm so jammed up that an hour, you know, for that person who needs that time, they're going to be wowed. For the person who's never had a cavity in their life and their gums are perfect, they're going to go, what the f*** are you doing?
No, they really don't. They really, really don't. I'm telling you, they don't do that.
Is that right?
They don't.
But in Minnesota, everyone's so nice. They would never say that to you.
But they wouldn't come back, and they come back.
Oh, you're so sweet. That's what they'd say. And
we just give them a shot, like Matt does. Yeah. We're like, here, have a shot.
Have a shot back. And a beer. Sorry. No, we've gotten Kansas.
I've Irish car
insulted the entire state of Minnesota. Perfect. we're killing it today, for sure. Oh my gosh.
Do you think I talk like that?
A little bit.
I saw Fargo. It's good. Yeah.
Think I'm gonna barf. Yeah.
I didn't even grow up here. Come
I know.
On, people.
You're like a Southern belle, but you still, you took to it, Melissa, clearly. So I do, I have to say, I'm sort of leaning towards what you guys are doing. Matt and I are sort of doing it the old fashioned way where they show up in hygiene and you just see what they've got, which is fine. It works okay. But I, you know, if someone, I'm starting to do some different marketing and I'm kind of wanting to make sure that I have the time set aside and I'm not, the less appointments I need to get the patient A, wowed, B, you know, thoroughly examined and treatment planned, the better for, I think, I don't mind, I could do it over 20 appointments, but I think the patient's going to be more receptive if I'm on the ball. I have to convince them of that.
Since I came in late here, you bring your folks through hygiene. How much time do you have for a new patient, if they're going through hygiene? What all do you plan for?
I probably plan for the same as a regular hygiene visit.
Hour?
Yeah, something like that. And then I come in the last 15 minutes or so.
Gotcha.
And the problem with that is it depends on what's going on in my operatories at that point. You know, that's the thing. When you don't set aside the time on my schedule, then it will be rushed. And there's nothing I hate more than, you know, not having the time in either operatory. That drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Because now during that hygiene visit, I'm assuming that your hygienist is expected to say hi and make nice.
Yep.
Do a full mouth probe, chart existing, get any necessary x-rays, educate them as to what kind of cleaning they need, and then allow 15 minutes for you.
Yeah, something like that.
See, we do it a little bit differently. Like, we've been doing an hour and a half since the very beginning in hygiene's chair. But then also since we've opened up a treatment coordinator type role, we actually have we have like a little 15 minute, interview with her, before the appointment.
On the phone or in the office?
What's that?
On the phone or in the office?
In the office.
That's where they give them the alcohol.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, we share refreshments, Alan. They're called refreshments.
Hello, refreshments.
And,
let's not be so boring.
Anyways, yeah, they take to the treatment coordinator room and,
that's what they call it now, the coordinator room.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one that used to be. That used to be your private office. I remember that story.
Yeah, which I sorely miss. But
now you just pace up and down the halls.
I do, or I stand in the broom closet.
There you go. Just moping around, you know.
but anyway, so they meet with her for a little bit. We kind of get a feel how much time they're going to need because we do kind of ask them a little bit about how long's it been since you've been to the dentist, you know, and all that stuff. And if it's been 20 years, we give them a little bit more time.
You might have some barnacles to scrape there. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yep. And, got to clean the boat. And we got, and so after spending, a few minutes with her, depending on their situation, then there's the transfer to the hygienist. And, so the hygienist has an hour and a half on her schedule. Oh. Some of that will be my exam, you know, mm-hmm. but, so the hygienist will, be the one introducing about what we do, what we're looking for. We have like this checklist of things that we look for as far as, periodontal, tooth health, oral cancer screening, you know, all that stuff. And she actually goes over the checklist with the patient, not in great detail, but to explain, hey, these are things we're looking at. We're not just cleaning teeth. And so it kind of builds value that way. And then we don't do a whole lot of cosmetic stuff. We're very bread and butter. So I only really bust out the Canon and do the AACD, images if I'm doing a comprehensive records. And that usually takes its own appointment. Sure. So usually it's the few intraoral images blown up on the monitor and, digital x-rays and that type of stuff for the most part, for 95% of people.
Okay. I got a couple questions for everyone here. First off, oral cancer screening exam. I do it on every exam. It's actually funny in the last few years, I see every patient every time they're in, unless for some reason I absolutely can't. I see, even though in most cases we don't charge for an exam both times, we charge for it once or we zero it out or whatever. And so I do this cancer screening exam. I do it the same way I've always done it. I do it the way that I learned it in the University of Minnesota. And, so, you know, you're basically feeling around their head, face, all that stuff for any lumps or bumps, any discoloration, anything like that. And it's particularly cool when you do it on a camera. However, my understanding is more or less evidence-wise, it's bull. It doesn't like it's sort of how a fair amount of the science is saying a lot of the screening and a lot of the examinations we do don't yield results on a cost-benefit analysis. It's not worthwhile to do because, and I have nothing to quote right now. I should look it up.
I hadn't heard that. That's
you can edit that in.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, and I still do it. I still do it because it's part of the culture of the office. People expect it. I won't lie to you. I didn't find it in my oral cancer screening exam. I found it in a radiograph, but we found, that's not true. One cancer was like an osteosarcoma, which is super, super rare. It looked like a failing root canal on lower anteriors, and she lost a good portion of her jaw. I didn't diagnose anything. I just sent her to the right person who sent her on. But then the other time it was a dude, you know, what's the most common one? The scariest, most common oral cancer.
Oh, geez.
Well, he was a failed
path. I don't know.
A long-time smoker, and it was on the side of his tongue, and it was
squamous cell carcinoma.
Yeah, squamous cell. Yeah. Yes. It was super obvious. It was super obvious. And I sent him immediately and, you know, they dissected his tongue, dissected his neck, all this stuff. He survived. He's doing great. You wouldn't even know. He has a slight deviation of his tongue, even though they removed a big mass of it. Amazing. So I have found it, but I can't, he came in because it was hurting him. He came in because it was noticeable. I didn't find it on my regular recall exam thing. So what are you guys using those lights? Are you guys doing a regular, you know, what do you think about the oral cancer screening?
Yeah, I use the oral ID light. Put the funny glasses on and shine a light and look for unusual stuff.
When you say funny glasses, those are like Groucho Marx funny glasses? Like?
Yeah, yeah, the little nose and the mustache. So, I mean, that's just to scare the cancer out.
Exactly.
You know, I shine this light that's supposed to fluoresce, the cancer. If that's there, it'll be seen with the light, but then you take the glasses off and you can't see it. So you're looking for something that's unusual. I can't speak from effectiveness because I haven't found shit, but but it doesn't stop me from looking.
Well, yeah.
Although, no, I did find, okay, we did have a guy came in, but he had a golf ball sized lesion in his jaw that didn't take a light. It was, yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
Conversationally, I thought he had lingual torii. I look in there, I'm like, oh God, you got to get the hell out and go see a surgeon now.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I radiographically is where you find, like, it's mm-hmm. it's the pano on the person that just hasn't had one for a while, you know, like you're screening them. That's where you find the weird stuff, I think. That's more often than not.
I had to get my path book out. What the f*** is this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, Melissa, tell me about your oral cancer screening exam. I know you do it the same way I do because we learn from the same people.
Yeah.
Dr. Nystrom.
I do exactly what you do, and sometimes I'll vary it, you know, mix it up by stick it out and grab it with a cotton, or sometimes I'll use my mirror.
Yeah.
But
do you find that since you've been doing it for, you know, 20 years or 18 years, that they know when to stick their tongue out?
Oh my gosh, it's awesome. Because, yeah, it's like, come on, stick it out.
Yep.
It'll stay there. No, like you've always wanted to do for 15 years.
Yeah.
Get it out there.
Exactly. Oh. You're even using the same lines that I learned from Nystrom. Yeah, it's so, I mean, it's, I do it. I'm not sure that it's very useful, but I do it. You know, it's one of those things where I think that some people would tell you that it's a waste of time. I think my patients have, just like pre-medication for joints, my patients have come to expect it.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
And in this case, I have no problem just continuing to do it because I don't think there's, it doesn't, you know, it's what I, it's,
yeah,
what
what's
I normally
the risk
do.
Benefit?
And well, and yeah, there's no downside to me palpating their tongue too much. I think that's the, except that it might seem a little weird if I did it all the time or if I did it in the grocery store.
You know, I have a question for Matt about his, new patient, hygiene thing, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So you're allowing 90 minutes. I'm assuming your regular one is about 60. So then
yes.
how do you, because that's probably a more efficient way to do it is to delegate those things that are delegatable, like the x-rays and the probing and all that stuff. But then mm-hmm. how do you allow time in your schedule so that you're free when she's done with her information gathering? Like for me, it just works better to just do it all in my chair because then all the stars mm-hmm. have to align, so to speak. I'm not smart enough to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. What I do is after they've got some of the base records that they've needed and everything, I can come in, take a look. Whether it's, if it's going to be a while till I can really have some time with the patient, you know, they let me know as soon as the base amount of information gathering is done that I can then work with. Are we doing prophy today? Are we doing the bright?
So yeah, so you can find your spot, doc, cause we're there.
Exactly. Yep. So that way it's not waiting towards the very end where I'm in the last 15 minutes and I have to hurry up and get to the stopping point of a root canal so I can go over there. They let me know about 20 minutes into the 90 minute schedule. You know, that they're ready. And so then that gives me plenty of leeway to where when I find a good stopping point to get over there.
That is, I think reliably, if I had that much time, I could probably make it work without biting into my schedule.
Oh yeah. With an hour, it's almost impossible. But yeah, giving itself an extra 30 minute leeway, I just don't really have too much of a problem.
So then you must utilize blocks in your hygiene schedule. Otherwise, with mine, to find 90 minutes would be very hard.
Yeah, we do. We have basically hour blocks for adults, 30 minute blocks for little kids, and 90 minute blocks. And the 90 minute blocks could be a new patient. It could be,
scaling
and root planting. Yeah. And that type of stuff. So.
And people don't violate your blocks. Like when we had the blocks, you know, this is for scaling and root planting. This is for emergencies. This is, I mean, people just be like, oh, he wanted that 1 o'clock on Thursday. So I gave it to him. And so the blocks are getting violated or we'd come to 2 weeks ahead.
Violated.
Yeah. Whoa. That
borders on criminal. Don't you violate those blocks.
My block. That's right. Damn you.
Well, and honestly, another brain trust. I want to hear about people who are doing block scheduling for everyone because I think I need to start doing that. But that's an aside, a little preview for the listeners.
Hygiene's the only thing I block for. I really want to embrace the block scheduling way of life. But I haven't been able to get it to it yet, but hygiene is the only real thing I block for.
You feel a little violated.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you've been violated, you'll
never go back.
Yeah, see, and I was violated for years, and so it's not past that.
Wow.
And your husband's an attorney, so.
the things that come out on the Dental Hacks podcast.
That's right.
I think that's going to be the title of the episode. Melissa's been violated.
For years.
Yep. Violated for years. Wow.
ABC After School.
That's an after school special.
Or just call it No More Minnesota Nice.
There you go. That's right. So one other thing I have to say, I saw Dr. Ed McLaren last weekend at the Vetter Society, and he talked a lot about photography, more than I would. But the other thing he talked about was Photoshop. He has some really good techniques for doing fast Photoshop kind of workups so that literally the patient in the chair getting their teeth cleaned can get like a cosmetic look at what you might be able to do for him. He says that grabs people more than anything. So my thing is like, and he says he's perfectly fine. If you're doing AACD, go ahead and get the full series, but he has a series of like three photos that he takes. He takes up close resting lips, up close retracted, and then like a full, like a portrait sized smile or something like that. And that's all he uses to start with. And it was impressive what he's an impressive guy. He might be the smartest man on the face of the earth, but he was teaching some really effective stuff. So, and I feel like, full photos, as soon as you start talking occlusals, I get nervous. I kind of pucker a little bit. I can't, cause I think occlusals are the hardest thing in the entire world to get, and your patients hate you for it. So,
No. You just need practice.
Yeah, you just suck.
Well, I'm pretty used to that, but I feel like, I took the course at Minnesota. I've taken a bunch of photography courses, and honestly.
Oh, I thought Minnesota had a course on sucking.
No, Minnesota, no. It kind of comes natural to them. Boom!
Freshman level.
No, but I've taken a lot of photo courses, and no matter what, the occlusal still seems to be cruel and unusual punishment, in any way you cut it. That's been my experience. But in any case, he doesn't jump onto the occlusal right off the bat. He might get that if he's doing like full arch rehab stuff, but the bottom line is for cosmetics, he likes to take these three shots. And I will say he's a photographer on a level much, much, much higher than I am, but I was really impressed by it. And I will, you know, I'll do all
that's
copy.
Not really saying much, Alan.
No,
I
know.
Lower the bar and we're all kind of a
Polaroid. I like Polaroids. I'll put some links to his stuff up on the notes that I took there too. He was really good. So you guys are always doing the full AACD thing, or is there a level that's a little bit below that when you're first kind of screening them that you take?
Yeah, I'm like Melissa. I'll do six because it'll include the occlusals. Because I found when I had like an intraoral camera, I was selling single tooth dentistry, and as soon as I was using the occlusal shots, I said at the very least doing quadrant dentistry, and people could see it better. They you'd show them this tooth all by itself on an intraoral, and they didn't know where the hell we were looking. It's upside down. It's in the back and they're confused. But with a mirror, they know that that's a upper tooth or a lower tooth, and they know it's in the corner or towards the front, and they seem to understand a little bit better. And they'll see other things while you're talking about that one tooth. They'll see other things in that picture. So that's why I like the occlusal shots.
Like all the nose hair. They'll see that.
Love
for
the nose
sure.
hair.
Yeah.
We tried to suggest we braid it and.
Yeah. You know. I, in defense of single tooth dentistry, I kind of love single tooth dentistry, but. I know what you're saying. You're trying to give them a bigger picture of what's going on in their mouth, but
yeah.
Can you think of a better like hour spent or 45 minutes spent than like a lower first molar crown? I can't. That's like the greatest thing on the face of the earth. So I will leave the full arch preps to you, and I'll just do a whole bunch of singletons. Thank you very much.
There you go.
In defense of single tooth dentistry by Alan Mead.
That's ABC nice. After school.
Another one.
Right after.
That's right after Melissa's been violated. That's right.
And there's nothing wrong. I do a lot of single tooth dentistry, but that's usually them understanding the quadrant and then still declining and going for just the one.
Well, not every quadrant has every tooth that needs help either, though. So that's single tooth dentistry can be legit.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it isn't, but you'll miss things or they won't see it and have the opportunity to.
I guess I know what you're saying. When you talk about the intraoral camera, really doesn't show the quadrant. It shows a lot of times your perspective is a single tooth at a time, and I totally get that.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes I don't know about you, but my intraoral camera, it looks like it's in focus when I take it, but then when I blow it up big, it's not. Yeah. But with a photograph, you can, you know, expand it on the iPad and it's still in focus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can see things better as long as you can capture all the way back to the second molar on your picture, which that's where I struggle is sometimes getting that second molar and the incisors all in one view on people that are kind of tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I'm with you. I'm definitely with you. So, you guys, I think we've kind of killed it. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that we need to, I guess the only thing that we didn't really talk about, which is completely separate, is the patient, the emergency patient. It's totally different when you're bringing in an emergency patient as a new patient. Mm-hmm. And you sort of talked about it. You say, look, the goal is to get you.
I'm still 12 views, AACD.
Yeah,
give me a mirror.
That's right. You're going to get the AACD, 12 photos of a fulminant abscess on lower left first.
Fuck you all. This is how we do it. We do it my way.
This is how we do it in my office.
I know you're in pain. I will not deviate. You will not violate my block.
Yep, that's right. The block is inviolable.
Hold on to that tooth. We'll get there eventually. I want to talk to you about whitening.
but I will say this, you know, how often are you doing emergency treatment the first time you, not how often, I mean, it depends on the patient, but are you okay with doing emergency treatment the day that they come in? In other words, opening a tooth or shucking a tooth or,
I'm good. Yeah. Usually emergencies can be done in 5-10 minutes. At the very least, you're going to give them a prescription and get them to come back. Mm-hmm. You pretend that you care and you're going to get them in that day.
Absolutely. You know, even if they're just sitting in the hygiene chair for an x-ray and a look-see, they're happy because you've seen them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do that routinely. And honestly, like I say, I think that is, I'm not going to say it's a majority of our new patients, but a lot of our new patients are that way. And I think it's a chance for you to really show what your office is like because they're coming to you at their worst. You know what I'm saying? And like, if you treat them nicely and let them understand you're going to help, you're going to make them feel better and you're going to take care of this for them. And I feel like it's a really good chance to kind of stand out because you have some empathy and you're going to make sure that it works for them. And in emergency, you know, in most cases, you're not doing much on them that day in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm.
No. And then like for us, so we'll get them out of pain, take care of that issue, and then invite them to establish as a patient here and bring them in the way we'd like to.
Yeah. And I try to keep my numbers pure. I don't count them as a new patient. To me, a new patient's a comprehensive exam. So some of these people, because, you know, nobody lies as much as a group of dentists sitting around talking, kind of like this. But they'll say, I get, you know, 70 new patients a month, but usually it's a whole bunch of things that I wouldn't count. So when people are comparing their numbers and new patient flow.
Yeah, and honestly, we don't count children as new patients really either. I want adult comprehensive exams. That's my new patient.
Yeah.
And like you said, I couldn't handle 70 new patients a month. For me, if I can have 15, that would be awesome. And now that Sarah's in my practice, if she could have 15, that would be awesome for her.
Mm-hmm.
Good point because like this last month or September, we had, if you just look at its straight value on the software, it says 35 new patients a month, last month. In August, it was 55 new patients. But you're right. Not all that's comprehensive. That's very much emergencies. Yeah. I count kids as new patients because I do ortho. And so I get quite a bit of that going on. But yeah, I think that's a really good point is it's not so much your new patient. Overall, it's, you know, how many new quality patients that are going to stick with you, want to do treatment, not cosmetic rehabs all the time, but are receptive to, you know, what you're saying. How many of those are people truly getting?
It's interesting. It's less about other dentists claiming their new patient numbers as marketing companies trying to tell you the kinds of numbers you would expect by using their marketing.
Someone in from a consult, from a mailer, is that a new patient? Yeah. Because, I mean,
that's another pet peeve of mine. People call up, do you do free consults? I try to be very clear. Consultation and examination are not the same thing. Now, I do free consults, but if you're not coming in and doing, and I'm x-rays and full exam, then we call it a cocktail party consult. And it's what the conversation you have if you met me at a cocktail party, you know, what's an implant and how does it work? I can't tell you anything about the fee or what it applies to you. And it's, I can't believe how many patients are confused about this or how many other dentists are as well. And cause they'll do exams half the time for free. And I'm not saying I don't do free exams occasionally, but, it's certainly not routinely.
That doesn't bother, an exam doesn't bother me if it's 5 minutes and it gives me that, you know, if a patient's wondering what kind of treatment they're looking for or what kind of treatment they could expect, I don't mind doing that. Well, I mean, that's essentially what I'm going to do for a consult. I'll look in their mouth for, you know, for that.
Have you ever had someone come in and they wanted like implants and you're like, you know, kind of glance and you go, yeah, okay, yeah. And then next thing you know, you take the cone beam and you look at them and you're like, oh, there's no way that what I said could be done is possible.
No, that's right. Well, I wouldn't, like you said, I wouldn't quote them a fee and I wouldn't tell them, I would tell them that they have potential to do this. I agree with that to some extent, but a lot of times you can get people, just giving them some information about what to expect is enough to get them to decide they want to go further. And I'm okay with that. I don't think anyone could argue that so much. Yeah. I think one of the things patients are getting used to hearing is the Aspen commercial where it's free exam and free x-rays. And I feel like, Aspen has sort of pushed that on the commercials like crazy. And
we don't have much Aspen up here yet, but yeah. Give it time.
That's pretty much the only place that we have that's competitive. I haven't had anyone come to me from Aspen that was happy with them. They do take excellent x-rays though. I'll say that. So I mean, I'm happy to look at their x-rays. That happens all the time. But I think that whole, when you say you don't understand why patients are so confused by it, I swear to God, that's what it is. That's what they're thinking. When they say consult, they mean free exam and x-rays. And of course that's an expectation that I think some of the marketing of the bigger companies have sort of put on patients. It's not really fair, but it is what it is. So,
yeah, I made a YouTube video explaining the difference between consult and x-ray and exam and pretty much, yeah. So, but the whole 70 new patients a month, that's why dentists have a high suicide rate.
Yeah, I can't imagine. When I mean, I hear that and I'm fine with that. I just, it's not the kind of practice that I have. If I had that, yeah, I wouldn't be coming into work. I'd be hiding under my bed, I think.
Yeah, how many days a week are you working and how many to fit 70 in a month? That means how many per day? And
If you've got eight docs at the office or something, that's fine, I guess. But
or if you're a scratch startup practice and you have no patients, sure. You need that.
Sure. Every patient's going to be a new patient. So
Right. That's right. Right.
It's interesting how those numbers get thrown around and they can make some people feel less than others because, and I'm like, yeah, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. Or like you said, the marketing people saying, look what we can do. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's where you always see it too. You always see. And so what they would consider a new patient clearly in some offices, they wouldn't consider that a new patient until they go for a comprehensive exam of some sort.
Yeah.
And so it is what it is. It's just sometimes I think that apples to apples, what is a new patient in one office might not be considered a new patient in the other office. So it's
right.
Worth mentioning. So, all right, you guys, I think we've done pretty well on this topic.
Boom.
I appreciate you guys spending a little time with me. Glad we were able to get you on, Matt.
Yeah, thanks. Sweet.
Yeah,
Good luck with your interwebs there. So.
Yeah, I'm going to have a talk with Net Zero.
Your America Online account is overdue.
Yeah, you got to get.
Yeah, I didn't get my new disc.
Your new free hours. Okay, fair enough. All right, you guys, thanks very much, and we will talk to you again soon. There you have it. Now you know how to treat new patients in your office. So go forth and do what the Brain Trust said.
Meet him at the car.
That's right. Kanye West. Work on your Kanye songs.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, I was going to work on the intro for the Go Hack Yourself, and I didn't do it. I'm still looking for the music, so maybe next week, we'll give that a try. But it's time for Go Hack Yourself.
Oh.
Jason, what brilliance do you have to offer our listeners in our Go Hack Yourself segment?
I was sitting in my office pondering my Go Hack Yourself segment, and I started scanning a document on my Fujitsu ScanSnap. And I said, hey, this is a pretty cool little thing I should tell everybody about. and I use it almost every day. So it's an upright scanner that I use for all kinds of stuff. And I find myself like scanning pretty much everything now and then shredding all kinds of stuff. So I just, if I have a piece of paper or a bill that I want to keep, I'll scan it, put it on my computer and just shred away so you don't have a bunch of papers lying around.
Here's a little tip for you. I'm 95% sure that you can scan using the ScanSnap, scan directly into Dentrix, the document center.
You can also scan to your phone. I can control the ScanSnap from my iPhone and scan documents to my iPhone.
You have a newer model than I do. That's kind of cool.
Yes.
So it's a good scanner. It's handy. It's fast, and it's nice because you literally can start it with a single button. You put a document in there, you put it in it, and it fires the computer up, and it you know, automatically it starts. It's very cool. I agree. Yeah. That's a good go hack yourself.
Oh, thank you.
You came up with a solid one. So that's the Fujitsu ScanSnap. They have a million different models. They have them for Mac and for Windows and maybe Linux. I don't know. They probably have them for everything. So
ColecoVision.
Atari 2600. Yes. It takes a special cable though. So, yeah.
So, Al, what's your go hack yourself this week?
Well, in the spirit of computer hardware, I've come up with I'm holding it in my hand right now. It is the Logitech MX Master Mouse. And interestingly, it's a gaming mouse. It's got a million buttons on it. It's just a really fancy looking mouse. It's like $100. It's kind of ridiculously expensive. It is far and away the smoothest, nicest mouse I have ever used. I only have one and I leave it at the house for all the podcasting stuff that I do. But even though it's $100, I've been considering getting one for the office because it is so much nicer than any other mouse I've ever used. And of course, you can get it for Mac or Windows. It doesn't match the same cool, like, silver outline as my iMac, but you know what? I'm okay with that because it's that good of a mouse. It's got multiple scroll wheels. It's got kind of up down scroll wheels and side to side scroll wheels, which is super nice. Just a really, really, really good mouse. Any surface, all that stuff. It's a great mouse. So you got to try it. The Logitech MX Master Mouse. So Jason.
Yes.
We've finished up another episode. Episode number 70 is in the can. So if you have
the mouse.
It is in the mouse. If you have any questions, comments, anything like that, email us at info@dentalhacks.com. And the other thing, you need to go to iTunes right now. If you are driving, don't go to iTunes. But if you're not driving, go to your computer, go to your tablet, go to iTunes and review us. Give us 5 stars. We're stuck at 85 right now. I told you if we got 100, I'd stop talking about it. Jason says 600, but I'm willing to cut you the slack of only 100. So 15 to go. If you want me to stop talking about this for 5 solid episodes, that's my offer, people. That is my offer, my final offer. So go to iTunes, rate and review us. We really appreciate those that have. And honestly, I read those things and it just makes me happy. I'm really glad there's people out there that are listening and enjoying it. And that's why we do it. We do it for you, people.
Yes. Damn it.
So we will be back for another episode next week, episode 71. So we will catch you then.
Yay.